Now I'm just a minister, but I'm retiring 1 year ago. And so I get to do just the things that I want to do. And nobody else draws up an agenda for me. That's great. My life I've spent in campus ministry for 15 years. I've taught in a seminary. I've led a parish the last 19 years in Southern California, Mission Viejo in Southern California. And I've started a mission congregation. I've been the pastor of one of the largest churches in our synod the last years. I served in East Africa for 3 years at a university in Tanzania, East Africa. And so I've done a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Well, everything you've said is what they're, all these authors are talking about when they talk about forgiveness. And yes, almost always, if you understand that somebody that's obnoxious or just treating you, wrongly or inconsiderately or deliberately hurting, or is to recognize that they are a fearful person. They've been hurt. They're struggling with something, and they're this is their way of responding to what. And once you understand that much of it is inner directed from them and not something that it's not so much to you that they're acting this way, but it's expressing their hurt out of their own life, that becomes a little easier to understand that and not react as a person that they're attacking, but rather to act toward them for the reasons that they have, that they have shown that. Well, for the moment today, I would like to have us, I think it would help if we forget all about the other person as much as possible. On why they hurt us, why they did what they did, why they were offensive, whatever. And forget about them. I like to deal with forgiveness totally in terms of what it can do for me. Now that, somebody used the word selfish. Well, let's really be selfish about this matter, because the truth is, once we realize what in an unforgiven state in our life, what it does to us, it so twists us that we can never deal effectively in our relationship with other people. And then we are contributing to the problem. And once we recognize that, well, I may not be able to control the other person's actions, but maybe I can control my own. And I take responsibility for my own. And once that can begin happening, then I create a totally different relationship. Instead of contributing to the problem, I'm now beginning to contribute to the solution. And I like to think of as forgiveness as making a deliberate choice to not impose any judgment on the other person. Making a choice to, whatever they've done, that's what they chose to do. But I'm going to choose not to make a judgment about them, and to place, the necessities of something has to be set right, or I'm going to impose my resentment on them. But it's to be able to make the choice in my own life that I'm not going to be a reactive person, but I'm going to be an active person. Most people go through life reacting to, if you sit there and scowl at me, I scowl back. And if I smile at you, usually people smile back. You know, and that's true in almost every situation. When I ask you to imagine hurtful people, I'm thinking of one lady in the congregation I used to be in. The truth is, she was a bitch. Oh, I've never seen such a destructive person in my life. And yet, she had the answer for everybody in that congregation. And if everyone would have done just the way she composed for it to be done, it would have been heaven on earth, she thought. But the truth is, she made life miserable for everybody, including me. But her husband, her children, especially her daughters. Oh. And I remember one day, she was just getting to me. I tried to avoid, I tried to do all kinds of things. And then I realized, she herself is the most miserable person in the world. I mean, she is miserable. And I'm not going to let her make me miserable. And other people that came to me complaining. And I resolved to have a different attitude. And when I started acting, it's amazing. A radical change came over. She was not bitchy anymore. She was only half bitchy. She never changed. But she actually smiled once in a while. She actually, it was a great departure. When I stopped reacting to her and started acting out of my own center. That's hard to do, because she didn't give much encouragement. It sounds like, I'll bet you've gone to your family and said, I'm gonna spread joy today. And you no sooner get into that situation than they start, and then you pretty soon you want to get out of there, right? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's the toughest thing in the world. But yeah, I want to read something. This is by an author, Forgiveness, a Bold Choice for a Peaceful Heart. I find it very helpful. All of us have ideas about forgiveness. And she says that our current understandings of forgiveness may limit what's possible for us. And so this is what she says. Before you read further, stop reading for a few minutes. Take a few deep breaths. Can you do that? She continually stresses in this, that deep breathing. Especially when you get around that cantankerous person. Especially when you get around those members of the family or that person or in a situation you were referring to. And make sure you keep breathing deeply and feel that sense. Air. It's a gift of God to you. It's a gift of grace. Wow. Appreciate it. Enjoy it. Take a few deep breaths, slower breath than usual. As you breathe out, feel yourself releasing tension and relaxing. Let your shoulders relax. By the way, I used to do this to people in church once in a while. I think a lot of people come to church and go through a period of quietness and meditation, but I feel that if they let their bodies enter into it, it helps a little bit. And I told them they never hear a bad sermon at the church. They'd just be a bad listener. The sermons, there was always something God had for them, something. And I can say that because I only preach about a third of the time. Other associates, and they did a lot of it too. But ready themselves. Relax. Then, in your imagination, gently put your hands to your head. Go into your mind, and gently, very gently, take out all the ideas that you currently hold about what forgiveness means. Now, these ideas about forgiveness, place these ideas somewhere safe where you can retrieve them again after reading this book or sooner, should you feel you would like to have them again. She's inviting you to be open to a whole new way of defining forgiveness and working with it in your everyday life. By suspending familiar ideas, you'll create an openness that will allow you to engage more powerfully and fully with the magnificent possibilities of forgiveness. I resonate to that. I have begun practicing the last few years of trying to empty my mind in almost every area, occasionally. When I approach a subject to study it, try to empty my mind, get rid of my present ways of thinking about things so that I might become aware of some fresh, some new ways. When you get to be as old as I am, the problem isn't, you can read and everything, but there's so much baggage in there right now that you can't accommodate stuff. So you got to get rid of some stuff so you can take something new and say, the truth is that baggage is there. It's going to influence you. It's going to be part of your thinking. But as much as possible, empty out in order to receive. By the way, I especially try to do this on what I believe. Try to set aside sometimes, what is it that I believe? What I remember, I went through a period that I had been instructing people, for instance, new member classes. And our congregation is one of those people are moving in and they're moving out. There's a constant transition. And so we were receiving 200 or 300 new members every year. We had instruction classes with these folks, and I got into kind of a routine. And what do we believe? And one of the things was, well, we believe in the Trinity. And I would start going through the old arguments, you know. And I began to realize that people kind of received them as head information, but it wasn't a belief that had deep meaning for their lives. And so I said, I'm gonna refuse to use any of the old traditional arguments or explanations of what the Trinity is, and try to come up with totally fresh ways to describe what it is that we believe. And suddenly this became a lively doctrine for me, whereas, frankly, I was ready to kind of throw it out. That's what she's asking us to do here about forgiveness. Forgiveness is an unused resource that for many of us, I would almost say most of us in the Christian life, is not used. And so, if we free ourselves up from some of the ways we understand it, maybe we can begin to capture what it is. What forgiveness is not? Every one of these authors lists some things. For instance, forgiveness is not condoning inappropriate behavior on somebody's part. It's not accepting that which is wrong behavior, wrong words, wrong thinking on other people's part. Can you identify with that? Sometimes we say, well, I can't forgive because I just, you know, they're wrong. Well, forgiving isn't condoning what's wrong. It's not going along with it. It's somehow relating to the person in spite of that. But no one. Let me read you something. How many of you know Simon Wiesenthal, the Jewish writer? Let me read something. Simon Wiesenthal, a Jewish person, found himself in the concentration camps in Germany during the Second World War. And he had seen thousands of people in the camps, most of them Jewish, of course, put to death. And he found himself in a Polish concentration camp. He had been assigned to clean the rubbish out of hospitals that the Germans had improvised for the wounded soldiers carried in from the Eastern Front. One of the nurses walked over to him, took his arm, and ordered him to come with her, took him down to a row of stinking, wounded soldiers, to the side of a bed where there was a young soldier. His head wrapped in yellow, pus-stained bandages was dying. He was a 22-year-old, perhaps, SS trooper, one of the elite Nazi warriors. The soldier, whose name was Carl, reached out and grabbed Weisenthal's hand. He clamped it as if he feared Weisenthal would run away. He told Weisenthal that he just had to speak to a Jew. That's why the nurse had come and got him. He had to confess the terrible things he had done so that he could be forgiven, or else he could not die in peace. What had he done? Well, he had been fighting in a Russian village where a few hundred Jewish people had been rounded up. They were ordered to take full cans of gasoline and pour it around the house. They marched in several hundred Jewish people into the house, and then they threw grenades into the house to start fires. And they were ordered to shoot anybody who ran out of the house. The young soldier told him this. Behind the window on the second floor, I saw a man with a small child in his arms. His clothing was afire. By his side stood a woman, doubtless the mother of the child. With his free hand, the man covered the child's eyes, and he jumped into the street from the second floor. And seconds later, the mother followed. We shot. Oh God, I shall never forget it. It haunts me, the soldier was saying. He said, I know what I've told you is terrible. I've longed to talk about it to a Jew and beg forgiveness from him. I know that what I'm asking is almost too much, but without your answer, I cannot die in peace. Get the picture? Silence. The sun was high in heaven. God was somewhere. But here, two strangers were all by themselves caught in the crisis of forgiveness. A member of the super race begged to be forgiven by a member of the condemned race. And Weisenthal tells us what he did. I stood up, looked in his direction at his folded hands, and I made up my mind. And without a word, I left the room. The German went to God unforgiven by man. Weisenthal survived the concentration camp, but he could not forget the trooper. He wondered, troubled for a long time, whether he should have forgiven the soldier. He tells it in his book, The Sunflower. And he ended it with an awful question for every reader. What would you have done? What would you have done? What would you have done? Let's talk about that a little bit. If that had been you.
I'm not sure I could have done any differently, because sometimes you're angry and things like that takes control.
Probably would have wanted to spit in his face.
Okay.
I probably would have wanted to spit in his face. I mean, that's kind of, he was asking a lot. Corrie ten Boom tells a story similar to that, only meeting one of the guards some years later, and he came up and asked her for forgiveness. And she had been speaking on forgiveness here in this country. And she did find it. She said, God moved my hand, will shake his hand. And what a wonderful peace came over her at that time. That was several years later.
I think she said in that passage that she couldn't bring herself to do it, and she had to ask God's help.
Mm-hmm. I actually read that story in one of these books. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that most of us have ever experienced the kind of agony that that must have been. And so it's really hard to say that we would be willing to forgive, and certainly in our own power we couldn't do it. It would have to be with God's help.
Apparently, at some point, they ask 32 distinguished people to respond to that question. Most of them said they would have done exactly the same thing he did. And they all, and then they were asked, and why would you do what you did? Or, and their point was that in a situation like that, to say there was forgiveness would be to treat a deed so awful as though it wasn't awful, or it was forgivable, and it isn't forgivable. That was what these folks said.
And that goes against what forgiveness supposedly is. It's not condoning the action. But I also felt that for a long time that if I was to forgive, that would be me saying, it's okay. What you did was okay. Which isn't, you know, some of these things will never be okay. But somehow they have to be put in the past and in perspective.
When you're saying, that was evil, it was wrong, that was sinful, but you as the person can be forgiven, the act itself can never be forgiven. I mean, it's an unforgivable thing. Distinguish between the sin and the sinner, you're saying. And I guess that's...
I think that's what we're supposed to do.
Wiesenthal, on some other occasions, would say, well, what we're supposed to do, maybe one of these things that we're carrying along, baggage about what we're supposed to do, but so difficult to do, that maybe we're not supposed to do it. And, well, I don't know, that's a situation, but surely to forgive is not to approve of that which is not approvable. You may distinguish between that and the person that's doing it. Forgiveness is not pretending everything is fine when you feel it isn't. When pretending everything is all right. Boy, I do a lot of this. You know, you just feel like you can't cope with everything that's around you, everything that's all the wrongs, and so you just pretend it's okay. And that's glossing over. Forgiveness to forgive doesn't necessarily mean to change your behavior. Somebody's hurt you, you simply stay away from them. You refrain from being close to them because they're just a very detrimental thing to you. You may forgive them, and it may be genuine, but you may choose to continue to keep your distance. Doesn't mean necessarily you're going to do that which is really objectionable to you. The writer says it doesn't necessarily mean you have to communicate to the person your forgiveness, or directly to the person. And the illustrations that they use are all of a nature that if you change your own attitude and the way you develop, if you try to sense why they have been so obnoxious, and then understanding that with some sympathy for it, you sense that they're acting in a very hurting way, but you try to befriend them, you may never get around to saying anything about forgiveness. But you're creating a different climate in which they then begin changing their behavior as well. Forgiveness is at least four things. Forgiveness is a decision. It's to look beyond how we feel about the thing. It's terrible, it's disastrous, or hurt, or angry, whatever. But forgiveness is a decision to see them as a person apart from what they've done to hurt us. Generally, to see them as fearful, they're afraid, they're constricted, they're limited, they're not free, and to make the decision to not simply to react to what they've done, but a decision to see them as a person that's acting, has done what they've done for all kinds of reasons. Forgiveness is a decision, it's an attitude. How I feel about something is partly a choice of mine. I don't have to, if I can change my attitude, I'll change the nature of the relationship itself. And that other person may be able to receive this change in attitude on my part. They may not be able to receive something that says, hey, I forgive you. By the way, have you had experiences where people have said to you, I forgive you? When people tell me that, my first reaction is, wait a minute, you're the one that needs forgiving. And I had one person that many times, anytime something happened that he didn't care for, he would tell me, well, he forgave me. If I gave a sermon that he didn't happen to like, he'd forgive me afterwards. You know? And
I had a very hurtful letter one time, which was in that sense, you know, that this is what you've done, so I forgive you. Well, the person who wrote the letter, I kept that letter for a long time because I really felt the need to be forgiven, and yet I felt that I needed to, that she needed to forgive me and I needed to forgive her. Until I kept the letter for a long time, but then I did something about it. I threw the letter away, and once the letter was gone, out of my dresser drawer, and I didn't see it when I opened the door. Then it was gone, and the forgiveness was there without having to go through all of this pain that I had been experiencing. And sometimes just a physical action like that.
You had that experience? I've had something like that. Yeah, you keep this thing around, and every time you see it, it just goes through it again. And
well, and the relationship is fine. And but as long as I kept that letter in my drawer, it didn't improve.
I've been trying to make a decision. 4 years ago, a couple years before I retired, I went through it. You know, you always have an individual that doesn't like something and they complain and they're, you know, and then once in a while I'd suggest, well, you know, maybe we just can't resolve this. Maybe you'd be happier to go some other place, or maybe we just need to cut the relationship. But as a pastor, it was either I get out or we some try to resolve this, but it finally wouldn't come to that, so people would leave. But I had a group of, I had 30 families one time. It was a conspiracy. And I have a stack of letters that about half of them wrote. And I'm tempted whether to throw them out and get rid of them, or I'd kind of like to keep them as a case study. And I'd like to, together with somebody else, kind of try to study this to see if we could learn something out of this. But it is really, it's such an interesting thing. But every time I go to that file and pick it out, that whole episode just, boom, repeats itself. And I'm reluctant to do it because it's almost like it's too easy. And then it would be, well, pretend everything is all right. Because I see some of these people from time to time. And I hear what you're saying.
You say, is forgiveness kind of like a loss when something happens? It's connected with grief, it seems. When we lose something, you know, whether it's a spouse or whether it's a child or whether it's a job or whether it's... Is forgiveness when there's that betrayal of trust or whatever, and someone is mean to you, that destroys the trust, creates the loss, the acceptance, and out of this comes the grief, the anger, all of that stuff that goes with grief. It seems to me that kind of what we've been saying happens in our experience of forgiveness.
Mrs. Walker had her 17-year-old son killed in an automobile accident. How could God do this to me? And she really, I knew her for 5 years following that, never forgave God for this. Because of course God did it, the accident, God caused it. And she had Bible verses to substantiate this. And it happened to me about the second week I was a pastor. You know, a young kid. And I never did. I don't think I ever helped her get beyond that one. But forgiveness, a deep sense of loss, all went together. Yeah.
And having between us and God, between us and each other. Mm-hmm. It's like the letter.
Forgiveness is a decision, it's an attitude, it's a process. It's really a one-time event. If it may come to where, you know, a decision is made to try to get together with somebody and you ask for forgiveness or you offer forgiveness but that seldom takes care of it if it's really deep and it's been around a long time. No, it goes on and on and on. And here, the author says, forgiveness is a way of life. It's a way of life that one develops that says, I'm not going to continue living as a victim of circumstances. Things that happen to me, I'm now victimized, and I'm going to refuse to do that, but rather to sense that I can have an approach to life that refuses to let anything victimize me, and sense that there's a power, and I'm the co-creator with God, and the creator of relationships and actions, and I can choose how I will continue in such relationships. Well, I hope you sense that I'm struggling with these things. As I said at the beginning, I do not feel as an expert in any sense. Tomorrow, we're going to look at a couple of scriptures. We're going to look at the prodigal son, the elder brother, the waiting father. I'm not sure what that parable, what it should be called. We're going to look at that specifically. And specifically look at the elder brother's role in that parable. And a few other things. If any of you would like to bring into this some further description of a situation where forgiveness is needed, or you don't know how to deal with this, or and let us all together struggle with it, I'd be willing to do that. Several of you brought up situations today that I'd like to have us as a group see if we can be helpful on how we handle that. Tomorrow, the session is at a different time. What is it? I was here last week and I left for the weekend. I just quickly had a chance to jot these down. On today is what? Tuesday.
Isn't yours tomorrow at 3:45?
What?
Is yours tomorrow at 3:45?
No.
No.
Tuesday. Tomorrow at 6:50. Yeah, 6:50 here.
15. Oh, right.
All right. Our time.
Thank you.
We go to 4:45. That's the time. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If anyone has a contribution that you could make to this, I would like to hear you share it with us tomorrow, because I need to learn something about this.